Moncrief on News Talk.
Jonathan De Burke Butler joins us once again to bring us some stories from other parts of the planet. Afternoon,
sure,
Jonathan.
South
Africa we're going to go to first, where her mother has been arrested over the disappearance of her child.
Yes, this is a story that has gripped South Africa over the last number of days. A young girl, 6-year-old girl by the name of Jocelyn Smith, disappeared outside her home in a township really near Cape Town on the 19th of February. All right. And initially, local groups of people along with police went out and started looking for her. Obviously, you know, they thought she might have fallen down a well, and they looked in sewers, various different places. And when the whole thing started, obviously the media were very interested in what the mother was feeling about the fact that her daughter had gone missing. And she originally was saying, you know, her instincts were telling her that her daughter was still alive and in this area, and that she was going to look for her everywhere in every shack in the township until she found her.
Mm.
But now she's been arrested. This woman was arrested along with three others. And they've been charged with human trafficking and kidnapping. Now, the makeup of this group is rather bizarre. So you've got the mother, whose name is Kelly Smith, and then her boyfriend, a man by the name of Jackie Opolos. And it's thought, or at least the way the story is coming together, is that with Kelly Smith's order, with the mother's orders, that this boyfriend and a friend of his may well have sold the young girl to what's called a traditional healer. Now, the traditional healer is the fourth person that's been charged. She's a woman, okay?
Mm.
Now, South Africa, like other parts of Central Africa or other countries that we've spoken about in the past, has this tradition where, you know, body parts get sold off for traditional healing and that kind of thing. But at this stage, we still don't know where the girl is, right? We think they've been charged, at least the two men have been charged, because they made a confession, but we're not sure whether that confession was made under duress. So it's all fairly loose. And as the story goes on, people are getting increasingly angry. This is, you know, happening in a very poor part of Cape Town. You know, there are people going around, and there's been alleged sightings of her, and there's mobs going into houses, knocking down houses, saying, oh, you have the girl, and it's causing absolute consternation. And I'm going to add into this the fact that the mother and the boyfriend involved smoke crystal meth.
Right, okay.
And I know that people mightn't like to hear that, but I think that might be a factor in this particular case, given that the child was sold for 20,000 rand, which is the equivalent of about 900 euros. That is probably a factor.
Yeah. Do children go missing regularly in South Africa?
Apparently they do. On average, I'm not sure where this statistic came from. I mean, I've got this from a report, but on average they go missing every 5 or 6 hours, apparently. So it is very common. Now, most of them are recovered. But for some reason, this particular story seems to have gripped the media and the population in general in South Africa. And as I said, 3 weeks now nearly, and over 3 weeks nearly, and still no sign of the poor girl in question.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's a particularly squalid example of this kind of story. Right, Pakistan we're going to go to now, where a man has received a death sentence for WhatsApp messages.
Yeah, WhatsApp messages that made their way to a plaintiff who alleged that he had received videos and photos from three different mobile phone numbers. And in these photos and videos, there were portrayals of the Prophet Muhammad and some of his wives that he wasn't particularly happy about.
Mm.
So he went to the Federal Investigation Agency. He made a complaint, and the Federal Investigation Agency were somehow able to track down the source of these videos and photographs to these two young men, one who's a 22-year-old student and the other who's a 17-year-old. And both of them have been accused and now sentenced because of accused of blasphemy and sentenced because of that particular law. So the two of them involved, as a 22-year-old man, he's been sentenced to death. And then there's a 17-year-old who's been sentenced to life imprisonment. Now, it should be said that the death penalty is handed out for this on a relatively regular basis, but nobody has been actually, it's never been carried out.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So it's the law is there since the time the British were there. Mm. Okay. And then in the 1980s, I believe, and more recently, it's been made more, more strict, in fact. So as I said, nobody's actually had the death penalty actually hasn't been carried out. But that's not to say that this individual is going to spend a very long time in prison for sending messages on WhatsApp. Yeah.
Have they admitted they've done this or given an explanation?
I didn't see anything around admission. And in fact, I didn't see any real detail on what the content itself was, to be honest with you, other than the fact that it referred to Muhammad or to the Prophet and one of his wives, apparently. But what exactly was going on in those photos or videos or how they were, you know, blaspheming against him, let's say.
Well, even images of Muhammad is blasphemous by its very nature.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in some ways, this individual might even be a little bit lucky because we've reported before where people haven't even got to trial and where they've been lynched.
I mean,
there was eight people last year who were lynched. They weren't even arrested. And police are in an awful situation. I remember there was a story actually late February of a woman in Lahore who was wearing a dress with Arabic calligraphy on it. And somebody took it upon themselves to say, hey, there are verses of the Quran on her dress. And they weren't at all. But she had to be protected in a shop. The police had to be called. And eventually the police had to negotiate with this mob to let her out of the shop. And she later had to go on TV and apologize for nothing.
Yeah.
So this whole question around blasphemy has gotten worse over the last number of years.
I suppose there's a context there within the subcontinent as a whole, given what's happening in India as well.
Exactly.
That this kind of things are becoming increasingly polarized.
100%, absolutely. I mean, often when we're talking about India, we talk about the other side where Hindus are after Muslims for blasphemy as well. Mm. So it is part of, you know, this history between the two countries. And I think there might be something mixed up in national identity with it as well for some people.
Yeah.
So there you go. It's getting worse anyway.
Right. Spain we're going to go to next, where Banksy scammers. Now, what's a bank? People know who Banksy is, but how were these scammers working?
Well, these were people who... So there's four people involved in this particular story altogether, right? So there was two people who appeared to be students who didn't have much money, and they were reproducing, they were forging pieces by Banksy, which I'd say is relatively easy to do.
I would have thought so.
To be honest with you, right? And they were selling these things off. And then there was two others who seemed to know a good bit more about the art world and how it worked and getting, forging authentication papers or whatever they're called, you know, certificates to say, this is a real Banksy work or whatever, right? But anyway, all four of these people have been arrested. It happened in Zaragoza, where the fakes were allegedly made. Some of the pieces were sold for as little as 80 euros, which kind of begs the question, do you really think you're getting a genuine Banksy work for 80 euros? And if you do, you kind of deserve to be scammed.
Yeah.
But then there was other ones which were sold for 1,500 a piece. Now, some of them were just, you know, sketches on cardboard. So you kind of go with the 1,500 valuation. You might believe that. The police in Catalonia, where this happened, are saying that they worked with the organisation that was set up in 2009 by Banksy to make sure that his works were authentic. Okay, this is an organisation, a business called Pest Control, which you may have heard of. And so that's how they found out. They got together. The police in Catalonia noticed that there were works that were similar that were going up online. Put two and two together, were able to trace it back. Got in touch with Pest Control, and they cracked this ring of scammers, as they're calling them. But they didn't really make that much money overall. I mean, the total was about 10,000 euros. And I think that the authorities are probably going to go easy on the two young fellas who made the reprints, judging by the language they said in the statement that the works were mostly sold at reasonable prices. And they said that they were young followers of Banksy's urban art who had economic problems. So even the fact that they're saying young followers and that kind of thing would suggest that they might get off light.
But I would have thought all Banksy's works were on walls and things.
A lot of them are, but this particular stuff was apparently for works that were created for a project that was in a place near Brighton called Dismal Land, which was a piss take, I don't know if I can say that, of Disneyland, obviously.
It had a castle, of course,
all this kind of thing. And so the they were, I suppose, mock-ups and things like that. So connected to that.
Okay. Germany, we're staying in Europe. And this is a sabotage case against Tesla protesters.
Yes, an interesting one in Germany, in the Berlin-Brandenburg area where Tesla's Gigafactory is based. This was built a couple of years ago, and it's been controversial for a while because there's questions over water and the fact that it's built near forests, and Tesla wants to expand the factory there as well.
Wasn't that denied, or is that still contested, whether they can expand that factory or not?
I think they're going ahead with it, to be honest with you. Not everybody in the locality is happy about it, and there are two environmental groups there, at least, that are trying their best and camping out to make sure that the forest doesn't get taken down. So, but as far as I know, it is going ahead. I might be wrong on that. But anyway, it appears that an electric pylon was sabotaged, and it caused a blackout, all right, and stopped the factory from working for about the guts of a week. So that meant that 750 e-cars that they produce every day were not being produced, and 12,000 workers weren't getting paid. Elon Musk wasn't particularly happy about it. In a sort of response on X, he said that these are the dumbest eco-terrorists on Earth. But he didn't go much deeper than that. It was claimed by a group called the Volcano Group, who said that it attacked the power grid and that they sabotaged Tesla today because Musk was a techno-fascist. They said this in an open letter, by the way, and they went on to criticise Tesla for driving predatory capitalism, worker exploitation, environmental degradation and modern surveillance technology, which is why their stated goal is to bring Tesla to its knees. Now, it certainly did that in this factory for a couple of days, but whether it's going to bring the whole organisation down is questionable.
Load the way to ever say Elon Musk has a point. In this, like, they are making, you know, electric cars. And so there's a certain irony about environmentalists.
There is, but as I mentioned to you there when we spoke about the factory expanding, there is concerns about the fear of water quality and the forest being taken down, that kind of thing. So they're looking at it from that point of view. But he may well have a point.
Because someone has to make them someplace. Peru, we're going to go to next, where the PM has resigned over a recording.
Peru, it must be a great place to be a political journalist. It never ceases to produce drama between the Fujimori families and all the resignations and the amount of former PMs and presidents in prison and the like. And this is the latest bit of drama. So this is a man, the former PM, Alberto Otarola, who's resigned over allegations that he attempted to use his influence to give contracts to a woman that he was having an affair with. He was a good bit younger than him. So Otarola is 57 years of age, and this woman, Yaziri Pinedo, is 25, right? Now, Otarola, before he became prime minister, was minister for defence. And he apparently gave two contracts to this young woman for the guts of about 10,000 euros. The investigation into this, or at least the press investigation into this, had been ongoing for some time. And then just last week, audio recordings popped up in which he's heard to basically say, "Send me your CV. I love you." Now, he claims, and she claims, that this recording happened in 2021. Now, he had claimed before that he had only met her once, by the way. But she's since gone on and said, "Well, we had a brief affair." But the two of them claimed that the recording happened in 2021, and he wasn't Minister of Defence until 2022, and she didn't get the contract until 2023. Nobody believes that, essentially. And unfortunately for him, the new president, Dina Boluarte, who's only been there for about 13 or 14 months, didn't believe him either, it appears. He was called back from Canada, very embarrassed, obviously. He was on a state visit, and he handed in his resignation, inverted commas.
Right.
So, investigation's been launched. He's saying it's all politically motivated and that people who've wanted him out for years have finally got their way. But it is unlikely we'll see him in such a high office again, to be honest.
Yes, indeed. Right, so what should we look out for over the next week or so?
Tomorrow the European Parliament is scheduled to vote on its Artificial Intelligence Act. So no doubt Jess Kelly will be talking about that across some programmes over the next couple of days. And then the 17th, there's loads happening on Sunday. The Canadian assisted dying law comes into effect on the 17th. 65 years ago on the 17th, the Dalai Lama fled Tibet, would you believe? And then Montserrat celebrates its national holiday on the 17th, which is, of course, St. Patrick's Day.
Indeed, yes. Jonathan, thanks a million.
Thanks,
as ever, Jonathan de Burke-Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.